Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. An investigation is underway after the city of Madison failed to count nearly 200 absentee ballots on Election Day. Plus, we look ahead to Inauguration Day at the state capitol and what's in store for 2025. And a top Democrat in Wisconsin receives a big endorsement as the search to lead the national party continues. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for January 3rd.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Well, Happy New Year to everyone, and Happy New Year to you as well, J.R., as we have another very busy political year ahead of us after 2024. And to begin, we're going to talk about a topic related to the November election, because it was just last week that it was discovered that the city of Madison found three sealed courier bags that were filled with absentee ballots, and they failed to report it after several weeks, and the public just learned about it days after Christmas. So here's what's happening right now. The State Elections Commission did meet on Thursday of this week to launch an investigation into the nearly 200 uncounted absentee ballots discovered in Madison more than a month after Election Day. So in a unanimous vote, WEC authorized the probe to find out how there was actually exactly 193 ballots went missing during the November 5th election and why city officials took so long, actually weeks, to notify WEC of the error. Now, during this meeting, of course, that was the big topic of discussion, but there was a Republican commissioner, Bob Spindell, who also tried to further the scope of this to add Milwaukee Central Count. Why? Because during Election Day, they also had an issue that happened due to human error, is what officials say, when tabulator doors were left open, an election observer noticed it, and they had to recount 31,000 ballots. But that was the end of it. There hasn't been any formal complaints filed with WEC, but Spindell saw this kind of as a window to say, hey, can we add this as well? That was rejected by the commission. Before we get into more of this Madison snafu, let's just hear from commissioners themselves about this issue, because it took a lot of them by surprise. Let's take a listen.
Given the seriousness of what happened here, our lack of knowledge, information that was not given to us in a timely fashion, I think we need to do something more, and also that we make public what it is we're asking for. In other words, that this process be transparent so that the public knows that we are working on this, what we're asking for, and so that we can make sure that folks understand how seriously we're taking this.
I don't look at this as a blame anybody. I'm looking at this from the perspective of how do we make sure this doesn't happen again? And how do we make sure that all the polling places in the state, all the municipalities in the state are following a procedure to make sure this doesn't happen again?
I call on the commission to investigate the same sort of thing at the what happened at the central count on November 5th, and the many problems and discrepancies with the results not being reported until 4:35 a.m. So I think if we do one, then we need to, to do both.
Now, it's first important to let people know that these 193 ballots wouldn't have changed any outcome in any local, state, or referendum that was on the ballot in November. However, it's just a big cause for concern, I think, because of how long it took for them to report this. It was November 12th, just days after the election, that they found this first sealed bag. And then it's the envelopes that are also sealed, but they noticed that they weren't opened and counted. Also, a staff attorney from WEC kind of explained that when they found this error, it led to other ones that they saw as well, because the number of people who cast a ballot didn't match their voter record books of people, how many people were there or voted absentee. It's also worth noting that this is such a rarity to see WEC in a unanimous vote and just to launch an investigation from the agency itself, because they have never done so since it was created in 2016.
So a couple of things to remember this case. One, so Milwaukee has central count. All the absentee ballots go to one place. They're all counted. Madison does not. Madison takes the absentee ballots and sends them out to the polling places where they're counted. What happened, it looks like at least, is there are courier bags that are sealed at the clerk's office. The bags are taken to the polling site, then they're supposed to be opened and counted. They weren't. The question is why? What happened? And so that's the main kind of thing we're trying to figure out. But there are two levels here. One, Marge Bosselman, a GOP appointee, former clerk, said during the hearing, we're not out here to assign blame or wrongdoing. We want to make sure we find out what happened to make sure it happened again. We want to provide good guidance to clerks. So her tone was, we're not out to punish the clerk of Madison or have her like on felony charges, basically. We want to make sure it doesn't happen again. At the same time, the commission seems kind of unhappy because they certified the election results November 29th. The first bag, from what we know, was found November 12th. Why wasn't a flag raised up then saying, hey, wait a second, our count's not accurate? Because really, our certified account of Wisconsin's election from November 5th is not accurate. Mm-hmm. We're off by 193 ballots from the city of Madison. So they're kind of like it kind of ground, made them unhappy, I guess, that they certified the wrong results. There's that level. Now with Spindell, trying to bring the Milwaukee thing, it's interesting because Ann Jacob was like, look, that's a crazy conspiracy theory. Remember, Milwaukee, so the central count, they begin tabulating the ballots. There are these panels on these tabulators that are locked and sealed with tape. Somehow, something that lock it properly, and so during the process, these things vibrate as they're going. This is the theory that they were vibrating and the tape didn't hold and the panel popped up a little bit. Okay? So Milwaukee said, look, we've got a problem. We're going to start over on 31,000 ballots. They said in the afternoon, we're going to be late. This is going to delay things. We knew that Milwaukee is always going to be kind of like later in the night. Then you add this starting over, it'd be early in the morning. Spindell said, hey, this caught the attention of national media, international media. The Trump campaign was unhappy. We should investigate this. And everybody's like, look, that's not worth our time. And oh, by the way, in the 2 months since the election, nobody's filed a complaint.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's that big of a problem for somebody, the Trump campaign, they could have filed a complaint about it. Side note, after 2020, all kinds of complaints about the election was run in Wisconsin. Trump wins, no complaints very much in Wisconsin this time. A side note. So anyway, they're waiting for a complaint there, which brings me back to the Madison thing. You could wait for a complaint about Madison. Somebody could file a complaint and say this is wrong, we should do something. The commission's saying we can't wait. We have a primary in 6 weeks in Wisconsin, a spring election in April. We don't want to wait and have this happen again. We want to try to find out what happened this time and prevent it happening again. So again, go back to the Bosselman thing. She wants to know not really how do we punish Mary Beth Wetzel, but how do we fix this from happening again?
Right, and what we could see in the coming weeks, hopefully not months, is that once this is resolved, there could be some guidance, like you mentioned, issued to clerks just to hopefully this never happen again, because it's very rare for this to happen, but mistakes do happen as well. You know, you heard Don Millis, a Republican commissioner, say, look, it's okay, things happen. But it doesn't have a good look when we certify the results and you knew about this and didn't alert us. So it ruffled their feathers, you could tell, based on the tone when they were talking about this. But it was nice to see some, you know, compromise on the commission, which is sometimes rare when it comes to these issues. But everyone agreed they need to look further into this. When it comes to the Spindell thing, too, you heard Ann Jacobs, the chair, also talk about, well, hey, Bob, we knew results were going to come in after three, maybe four. I think it was Pauline Gutierrez at the Milwaukee Elections Commission that's estimated 4 a.m. Well, she wasn't too far off from that number. But it goes back to, once again, was mentioned on the call by Jacobs, is that, hey, we don't have early processing here. We've urged lawmakers to pass that. That's the bill that would allow clerks to start processing ballots the Monday before the Tuesday election. Doesn't mean they're going to open them, but they can start feeding them through the machines and saving a lot of hours and manpower on election day.
And look, for that issue, Scott Krug, Republican from Nakusa, who chaired the Campaign Elections Committee in the Assembly this past session, big proponent of that early count bill. He's now in leadership. He's not chairing the committee anymore. But after this came to light, he's on Twitter, X, I'm sorry, saying, hey, we need to talk about these issues and figure out a way to fix this stuff. So my question is, in the next session, will this provide more motivation get early count done, or it'll be a flag for people to say, look, if we can't trust this clerk in Madison about this issue, why should we trust her when it comes to early count? Because remember, the concern / conspiracy theory is that clerks in Democratic areas will see what's going on with early count and say, hey, local officials, you need to worry about this ward or that ward. It's a little soft right now. again, you can't count the ballots, you can't, you know, just basically process them. But that's kind of been this theory thrown out there by opponents of, we're worried that could lead to fraud. That's their theory, at least. I'm curious to see how this impacts that discussion in this coming session legislature.
Right. And just to recap what happened last session, it passed the Assembly, never received a vote in the Senate. It was very quiet, mm-hmm. the main reasoning why. But, you know, the Senate and Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu has a much smaller majority that he's working with in the new year. So could that mean he can rely on Democrat votes? But does he want to rely on Democrat votes to pass this bill? There's always that political posturing in this Capitol that happens when it comes to these certain measures. But we do know there are a lot of Republicans and a lot of Democrats and the governor who want to get this done. I think hopefully after every big election, people start saying, hey, it'd be kind of nice to go to bed at a certain time, but everyone's got their opinions on it. We also just want to mention, too, because this show is going to be a lot of looking ahead to next week as we have a lot of busy dates heading into the new year and the new legislative session. One issue with WEC that still remains to be figured out is the fate of Megan Wolf, who is the administrator of WEC. Of course, we know this is an issue before the state Supreme Court, and once that gets resolved, I mean, we don't even know if it is, obviously the court will resolve it. Will the next 1 or 2 years, will Wolf still want to be doing this job?
Yes, absolutely.
All right, let's get to some dates that I kind of just mentioned about a busy schedule in January and February. Of course, on Monday is Inauguration Day for all the newly appointed lawmakers that will be in the next session. And then on January 22nd, we did get some dates for the State of the State address by Governor Tony Evers. And then finally have the date set for his budget address on February 18th. And as you and I both know, this is really where the governor can set the tone of what he wants the session to look like or what his priorities are heading into, working with a $4 billion surplus, but they also got to pass another budget.
So first with Inauguration Day, maybe some intrigue. There'll be a vote for House Assembly Speaker on Monday. So Robin Voss obviously was selected by his caucus to be Speaker again, has to go to the floor now and get a vote. You have to have 50 votes out of 99 members, 54 Republicans. So in theory, he could lose some Republican support, still become Speaker. The question is, will he lose any? Interesting note, Chuck Wickers, Elijah Behnke, and Scott Allen, all Republicans in the Assembly, who this current session that ends on Monday, did not have a chairmanship, got chairmanships this session. It was seen as an olive branch to say, hey, okay, let's try and have a fresh start, get back on board. Some people thought maybe it was also for Robin, thinking, hey, think about that Speaker vote. Let me make sure I got everybody on the same page. Interested to see how that plays out. With the governor's dates, interesting enough that he actually asked for some different ones. Mm-hmm. So with State of the State, he'd asked for the 22nd or the 28th. They picked the 22nd. With his budget address, he always wants to go later. The governor wants more time to basically figure out his budget and put final touches on it. He's asking for the first week of March or last week of February. He's going to the NGA, National Governors Association, February 20th to 22nd, I think it is. Republicans gave him the 18th to do his budget address. So a little early he wanted to do it. Want to avoid the conflict with the NGA. But their counter, they're proposing on the floor the 18th to the 20th. So this fits their travel
schedule plans.
Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to watch. One, the governor setting the tone in the 22nd. It basically, in odd-numbered years, the State of the State is the teeing up the budget. So the governor will roll out a couple budget initiatives in the coming weeks, you know, start to kind of drop hints. The 22nd becomes the, I'm going to give you a little bit of a taste of my budget. The 18th is the whole thing. I will bet you money, Emily, on the 18th we'll see Medicaid expansion.
I was just writing these down, Jer, because I was going to read them off.
Legalizing marijuana.
Raising the minimum wage.
Raising the minimum wage.
Child care.
Changing the manufacturing ag tax credit to, I mean, basically the things he's done before. Mm-hmm. We'll see those caps or those proposals he's done before. Then we're going to watch, okay, joint finance, will they take it all out in one step like they did before? Will they go back to base budget, they call it? So you have the option when you're doing a budget as a legislature to work off the governor's proposal or the base, which is basically existing law. Republicans have basically gone back to base each time and worked off of that. Now, when you do that, the governor still has final say with the veto pen. So what are they going to do with this $4 billion? Robin Voss, he wants to do a tax cut bill first, okay. So will the governor sign that? Will he say, I'm not signing anything unless it's in the budget? Interesting to watch how that debate plays out in the coming weeks, right?
Right. All right. And staying on the topic of heading into the next legislative session, there is going to be a prominent staffer, I should say, that is going to be in Representative Chuck Wicher's office, which is, of course, kind of always had a rocky relationship with Speaker Voss, because he now is hiring outgoing State Representative Janelle Branchon to his staff. Now, Branchon, as you remember, of course, has previously supported Assembly Speaker Robin Voss's opponent. She also has, you know, put blame and pressure on him, along with former president, or I should say President-elect Donald Trump, after his loss in 2020. So she's going to be back in the Capitol. She's going to be back around next session. And now Wicher's called her a good fit, as he now becomes chair of the Constitution and Ethics Committee, which is actually a committee that was basically shut down last year and now is kind of being revived this year. But how much work they could really see kind of depends, because I think Speaker Voss wants to see how this all works out. Let's see if there we can turn a new leaf, look ahead. But if there are some issues that come up that he doesn't really like, I'm not sure there's going to be a lot of issues for that committee to take up.
Yeah, interesting. One, Wicher's, along with Alan Behnke, have been perceived to be kind of part of this thorn in the side of Robin Voss. Wicher's insists to me repeatedly that he has not got a problem with Robin Voss. Robin has a problem with him, that he is more than happy to work with the team. As long as this session is about conservative principles, no problems. So we'll watch that. Branchon, remember, in 2022, she was removed as chair of the Campaigns and Elections Committee by Robin Voss after he won his primary. She was then voted out of caucus, like barred from closed caucus by her colleagues, said, "We can't trust you anymore." So it's an interesting move in that regard. Also, remember, Branchon's got two lawsuits pending right now against the Elections Commission and the Ethics Commission. One, with the Elections Commission, she's saying you can't use, called ERIC. It is a system that you states share information about who voted. It helps people figure out if anybody voted twice in different states or what's going on. She's arguing that that can't be used under this new constitutional amendment approved in the spring, right, about who can do election tasks. So that's pending. Two, she has one against the Ethics Commission, arguing that they can't move forward the prosecution of her or recommending one to DOJ over the whole Adam Steen thing. The allegations came up almost a year ago now that she helped Adam Steen try to evade campaign finance limits in his challenge of Robin Voss in that election in 2022. So a lot going on in that office in this coming session once she joins the staff.
All right. Let's move on to our next topic this week, because over the holiday break, we now know that there's going to be a new DNR secretary after there was a big vacancy in that office for many, many months. So who's going to be leading that is Karen Heon. She's going to be the next secretary of the Department of Natural Resources, a cabinet position that, like I mentioned, has gone unfilled for more than a year. The former secretary, Adam Payne, resigned in October of 2023 for personal reasons. I think the biggest lingering question is, will she be confirmed?
Yeah. Devin Lemahue, the Senate Majority Leader, came out because the governor announced it like basically at 5 a.m. the Monday before Christmas. Lemahue was like, this is more of Evers games, like, you know, why are you doing this at this time kind of thing. Mary Falaskowski, the new Senate President, issued a statement saying, well, you know, we'll see, essentially. The question is going to be, what's the appetite for the confirmation fight? How does she do talking to lawmakers? Oh, PFAS. Remember, there's been this dispute between Evers and Republican lawmakers for a year and a half now. There's $125 million that was set aside in the budget to fund PFAS efforts to combat them. Has not been released because Evers has not signed off on legislation that Republicans want to kind of provide structure for that money. So will she have answers about that? What's her background with hunting, fishing, natural resources, those kinds of issues? That's going to be a concern for Republicans.
Stewardship funding, too.
Yes. Devin Lemahue told me in your interview, basically, the program's going to be dead. So remember, with stewardship, it's authorized every couple of years. I think it currently ends in 25, 26, if I remember correctly. About $33 million a year between borrowing other money to pay for land easements, conservation efforts. But the Supreme Court this past summer said, look, the system you have right now in place or had in place where the money was authorized in the budget, then the DNR had to come back and submit purchases of certain sizes to the Joint Finance Committee is illegal. You can't do that separation of powers issue. Well, Lemahue says if there's no structure for us to review purchases, we're not going to renew the program. So will they follow through on that threat? Will that mean that it's, it's not going to be authorized in the budget? There's a big question there. So, yeah, so I mean, she's appointed DNR Secretary. I'm wondering if she's going to be confirmed DNR Secretary, especially with the numbers they have.
Right.
18, 15 starting Monday. Will they have the same appetite to vote down people? You can only lose one or two members now, or one on any vote, confirmation vote, so it'll be interesting.
Right. It's kind of been there essentially, as Governor Evers likes to call himself, the goalie to block, mm-hmm. you know, Republicans' agenda. This is kind of their goalie, their defense that they like to play when it comes to someone. If you basically have a past or something you voted on and I don't know, past few months or even 10 years ago, it could be basically on your rap sheet and they might reject it. They also have, you know, rejected a lot of appointees. I think the number is closer to
22, and since Evers took office, it was four in the 4 decades before that. Now, there's one, to be fair, there's one who's not really Evers' appointee. It's kind of like a long story. But anyway, executive branch appointees. There's more of an appetite than there has been before with this. And, you know, for Republicans, they keep saying, look, if Evers sent us people who weren't, I don't say offensive, but who weren't more
or
palatable.
Partisan, as sometimes they call it.
Then we wouldn't be doing this. But he keeps sending partisan people. So how partisan is she in their minds?
Right. And, of course, it's always hard to fill these positions, too, because if you know you're not going to get confirmed, why even sign up for the job in the first place? But we'll see where that goes. It could be a new year, a fresh start, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone wants to find compromise. Everyone wants to get along in politics.
Sure.
kidding, of course. All right. Let's move on to our next topic. Another story that dropped over the holiday week is related to the special counsel. Mike Gabelman, of course, he's the former state Supreme Court justice that oversaw the failed investigation into the 2020 election, which was launched by Assembly Speaker Robin Voss shortly around 2021. So here's what happened in court. Of course, we know there's been a lot of legal fees with very separate cases. Wisconsin Appeals Court in Waukesha recently overturned $241,000 in legal fees and costs to a liberal group who sued them. That's American Oversight, related to lawsuits that filed against Speaker Voss over the 2020 election investigation. The court also rejected Voss's efforts to reverse a Dane County Circuit Court decisions ordering the state to pick up an additional $143,000 in legal fees and $98,000 for another order. You know, what we kind of really just want to put in perspective is that you see all these big numbers, $241,000, $143,000. All of these legal fees are likely going to be picked up by taxpayers.
Just clarify, so there are multiple open records lawsuits with this.
They
say they rejected Voss's attempt to overturn them. So we've got one patch of legal fees that the court said, we're not going to accept Voss or challenge them. Nitty gritty stuff. He argued that one batch of legal fees, that they perfected the bill too late. That's a legal term. I mean, turning the number too late. So not going to do that. One batch, Voss said, hey, myself and Ted Blaisdell, the Sergeant Arms, aren't subjected to this order. We shouldn't have to pay legal fees. Rejected that. The court also, there's another case, Frank Remington, Dane County judge. So Gabelman put on a performance, if you want to call it that, during court one day, was not very hospitable toward Frank Remington's questions. Remington also found him in contempt of that. Oh, also, Gabelman made several borderline misogynistic comments about a female attorney for American Oversight. So Remington held him in contempt. All kinds of stuff came out of that case, including a contempt order that he had not turned over records. I think it racked up $24,000 in contempt charges. The court overturned that. Now, there are like four lawsuits by American Oversight, three or four, about open records. There's one more piece out there, another batch of legal fees that appeal was put on hold while this other stuff was going on. So long story short, there's like $450,000 legal fees overall that was awarded to American Oversight. The appeals court said, yeah, the 240, Robin, you're not getting this overturned. Other batch is still out there. We have a ways to go. Now, he could appeal at the U.S. State Supreme Court. That's an option. With the composition of 4-3 liberal majority, people aren't sure he'd be very successful up there. Number two, the more you appeal it, the more you rack up. So this is what we know of right now. My experience with legal bills has been, if there are continued legal fights, you can win more legal bills.
Right, so, every time you go into court, right.
And at one point, I had gone through and looked that the Assembly had spent more on legal fees after the original case was over. To appeal it, they would have had to pay if they paid up front. So in some of these cases, not all of them, I think, but some of them. So there are a lot of layers there, I know, but basically the bottom line is we as taxpayers are going to pay some money to American Oversight, unless there's appeal to state Supreme Court and that majority liberal majority shoots down their request for legal fees.
Right, and speaking of contempt of court, of course, that is also another issue with Gabelman before possibly the state Supreme Court, after the Office of OLR is looking into his behavior during that entire investigation and what comments he said in Judge Remington's courtroom. So that is still lingering out there as well. All right. Our last topic this week is talking about a big endorsement a top Democrat received recently as we continue to cover the race who was going to lead the National Party. We're talking about Ben Wickler, of course, the chairman of the state Democratic Party here. He secured an endorsement from Senator Chuck Schumer for the DNC chair position. That happened on Thursday. Now, of course, this is a very prominent Democrat to, basically give Wickler his blessing. And we know that this election is now going to be happening on February 1st. Now, this isn't, everyday people voting. It's members of the DNC who vote this. And there's several other names out there, but it's kind of coming down to the wire now of Weckler's kind of campaigning for the job.
I think there are three or four public forums to be held between now and February 1st. This is the highest ranking Democrat who's endorsed so far in the race, I believe. Look, this is not a race of normal people.
Not to be
offensive for DNC or the RNC. These are the ultimate party insiders. They are like the creme de la creme of party insiders. It's about 440 people, I believe, in the DNC. We're talking state party chairs and vice chairs, some elected officials, DNC members. So these are people who are, the total in crowd. The question is, does this sway people? They have a Chuck Schumer endorsing Ben Wickler. Martin, the Minnesota party chair, has said he's got more than 200 people backing him already. We'll see if that comes to fruition. It's really kind of about who's been more successful. And Wickler's argument is, look, all these swing states moved to the right. Wisconsin moved to the right the least.
We had a
1.6 point move versus 6 points for the nation. Tammy Baldwin won re-election. We've done good things here. Martin's been saying, hey, well, what about Ron Johnson winning in 2022? What about Donald Trump winning your state in 2024? Now, Martin hasn't talked about the fact that the Minnesota legislature, they lost seats, Democrats did. There's some issues going on. It's a long story with their legislature right now. One Democrat, for example, is not living in his district, so that seat's been vacated. Long story.
Yeah.
But anyway, so they're kind of like fighting who's the better chair and who's better positioned to lead us going forward in this national environment where they're starting to get back on their feet, essentially. We're all seeing all these postmortems about the election, about Democrats being in the wilderness. They've lost touch with with the base, with working class people. They're too enamored with A, B, and C, not paying attention to D, E, and F. Like, they're basically going through this bloodletting process right now. And the question is, which of these, well, not just these two, but the other candidates, who's the best position to lead them going forward and trying to get them back on their feet? Now, for Wickler, you have an opportunity in April with the Supreme Court race to get, so, hey, look, we've had success. That comes, though, 2 months after the
chair race.
Right, I was just
going to say, it's a little too late.
He can't prove himself once again with that race, but something to keep in mind, he's also got to raise money for the Supreme Court race while he's making calls to DNC members trying to line up support for his own campaign.
Right, it's going to be a big task ahead for whoever gets that job. Also, just want to kind of look ahead to D.C. and what's happening on the Hill today, because there is a big vote that is usually a fairly routine process, but sometimes it takes a while to get a vote to elect a new speaker. But they're not going for a new speaker. They're trying to get members of Congress to elect Mike Johnson as House Speaker. Now, of course, if you look at 2 years ago, since we're in 2025, it was 2 years ago, House Republicans had a historic journey of going through 4 days, 15 votes to trying to get then Representative Kevin McCarthy, then 9 months later, he was ousted by Republicans. So now this is why, once again, it's kind of in the spotlight of whether Johnson will be the next speaker. Now, he does have the blessing from President-elect Donald Trump, but Johnson can only lose support right now from one Republican, so he's got to get everyone on board. So that's something that we're going to keep our eyes on today.
A lot of focus of this is because the bigger picture is Republicans have a very narrow majority, at least coming up. So if all people who won races in November show up, it'd be 220 to 215. Gates, though, from Florida, so he's not coming back to Congress. So 219 to 215. Two of those 219 are going to be leaving to join the Trump administration, assuming they're confirmed. Now you're on 217, 215. It's a historically narrow majority. Now they'll add seats back as they have special elections, that kind of stuff. But it underscores a challenge for Republicans of, can you govern? It's easy to be the party of no when you have a Democrat in the White House and a Democratic Senate say to pass a bunch of bills, throw them over and say, this is our messaging effort, essentially. Now you have to govern. How's that going to go? That'll be fascinating to watch that process plays out, and if they can stay unified on these issues, because Trump has an aggressive agenda for initial few months of his administration. Can they deliver on that in the House?
And it's going to set the tone for mm-hmm. the entire year. All right. Well, that will do it for us this week. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.